The following program is produced and distributed by KETR.org. You can help by visiting KETR.org and clicking donate.
All right, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Snuffers in Greenville, Texas, for this episode of the Lions Roar Coaches Show here as we come off a homecoming week and we go into championship season for a lot of our sports. Some of our coaches are out on the road recruiting. Coach Case is out recruiting for volleyball. So our normal leadoff hitter isn't here, but we bring in Coach Luke Scribner to talk about cross country as they head to Canyon for the Lone Star Conference Championships this Saturday morning. Since we've last had you on here, we've had a couple of meets. Talk a little bit about the home meet and the performance we had then and all the stuff we fought through to get that thing done.
Mm-hmm. So I think the last time I was here, we actually talked about rescheduling the home meet because we had a little bit of rain.
And
so,
thunder and lightning, yeah, and everything else.
And all that fun stuff. So the weather finally cooperated with us. We got to compete on October 12th. We placed second. I didn't race some of our top guys.
I thought you said you didn't race, and I think that would be strange as a coach for you to race. But
no, I let them do the work. We didn't race some of our top guys. So we went out and ran well against a really high-ranked team, Tarleton, on both men and women's. I think they're ranked
they're in the top 10 in the region.
Yeah, top 10 in the region for sure on both sides. I think 8th and 9th or something like that. We were led off by Evan Lukey. He broke 26 for the first time ever, which is like 5:10 pace for you.
And how far are they running for this, just for context?
Yeah, so the guys run 8K, which is a little bit under 5 miles.
Okay.
And the women run 6K, which is right under 4 miles.
Okay.
So like 3.74 or something like that.
All right.
Yeah, so our men went out and ran really well. We didn't run our top runner, Sergio Marcello. He's been having a little bit of problems with, you know, going out and racing, so we did a really good workout with him, and then the other guys stepped up and did what they needed to do. Tarleton is good, and I think we're growing every single week, and we're getting to that point where I think that we can run with them at the conference meet because we're consistently getting faster and faster and faster and faster. I think every single one of our guys has ran over 2 minutes faster than what they ran in the first meet of the year.
Wow. That seems pretty impressive.
Yeah, it is. It's a big deal. So,
and then you go to Angelo State a couple weeks later, and then let's stick with the guys' race for now, and then we'll talk about the women's team in a second.
Yeah, yeah.
So, how'd the guys do out in San Angelo?
Yeah, so the guys out in San Angelo, I didn't race my top three.
Okay.
So my 4, 5, 6, all the way to my 9 runners, they ran well. But we did a workout. So a lot of people will think that you have to run fast every meet of the year. So I raced Steven, Garvin, and Mason, and they all three did a workout for the first 4 miles of the race. And they were pretty much spent 8 minutes slow jogging in the middle of the race, which is some people think, like, what are you doing? Why do you think that, you know, that kind of stuff? So, but we're building towards the conference championship, not for the Angelo meet. So I think we end up getting second. Or third, something like that.
We got second.
Yeah,
Tarleton
second.
Didn't get 15 points in that match. That meet, rather. It got broken up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So it was a little bit closer, 20 to 47 instead of 15 to 60 or whatever it was. So, I mean, like I said, every week we're getting closer and closer and closer to that goal. We want to finish top 10 in the region and, you know, top 3 in the conference. And that's Tarleton is the top dog right now. So we're going after them. And I think if we add our 3 other pieces right there, that gap is even smaller than what it was. That's on the men's side. I think they're ready to rock and roll when it comes time to conference. They're looking good. They're looking strong. And they're running very, very confidently. My women's team, I think they're just starting to realize what they can do. Early on in the season, we had like a lot of injuries we're coming back from. I think 4 of our 7 girls had some sort of big surgery last year.
Wow.
Whether it was knee surgery, ankle surgery, ACL, different stuff like that. So that's tough to come back from, especially, you know, learning a new coach and all that kind of stuff. And obviously, just like the men, the women have gotten faster and faster and faster. I had Shelby White. She ran 26:40 something at
the home meet?
At our home meet or something along those lines. And
26:18.
Yeah, 26:18. So the very first 5K she ran was 26:18.
So she
ran over a half a mile faster in the same time.
Wow, that's
so
pretty impressive.
We're seeing some good things with the teams, especially on both sides. The women, they're like I said, they're starting to realize, okay, hey, I can do this, and they're starting to gain a little bit more confidence, where my guys just go out and want to, you know, headbutt the wall if they could, you know, kind of thing.
That seems like that wouldn't be good race strategy, headbutting a wall. There's probably not a wall near the cross-country course, and headbutting it, any trainers listening, don't worry about it.
We don't want concussion protocol. We don't have to deal with that right now.
So at the Angelo meet there last week, Brandi Stalder, a junior out of Sanger, she's been top runner pretty much since she's been here as a freshman.
Yeah.
She goes out, runs 23:22, and wins that race by a full 3.5 seconds, it looks like. Is that a pretty big gap in cross country? Congratulations to Brandi on winning. Got to be exceptional for her, because even though that wasn't her fastest time, she hasn't been at the front of the pack in many races this year.
Yeah, so at our home meet, I let her go out and just see what she could do. Mm-hmm. And she had a little bit of an asthma attack, so she ended up falling back a little bit and running a PR there. At this meet, like the guys, I held her back a little bit and just told her just to kind of run easy, and then the last half pick it up. So that gap was actually pretty close. The girl from Angelo was like right on her tail. Okay. And then I was like, all right, hey, time to go, you know, and she just picked it up and did what she needed to do. So I think Brandi can go to the conference championship this week and finish top five for sure. There's some good runners from, like I said, from Tarleton that'll be there. Eastern New Mexico has a really, really fast girl. But other than that, I think she can run with anybody in the conference. She's got that mentality of she doesn't want to lose, which is a great aspect in a runner. That's the kind of thing you want. And, she's kind of been doing workouts by herself. She raced by herself there, kind of out in front of everybody. And, when it comes time to the race, I think she's going to be ready to go.
When people think about cross country, they might not really know what the course means. You hear cross country, you know that you're out in the dirt and the grass and the trees and that kind of stuff. But a lot of races, for people that don't know, get held on golf courses and that type of thing. You got a little bit of that rolling terrain, not like severe hills or sudden turns. But our meet is pretty much a loop in a field.
Yeah.
It looked, from the pictures that I saw, Angelo was fairly similar.
Yes. So in Angelo, they've been having a lot of rain like we had in Commerce. So they had looked like somebody just dumped rocks everywhere. So it was really funny. But cross country is just going out and just running over whatever terrain it may be. You know, whether it is, you know, perfect manicured grass like we're going to get when we go to Colorado, or if it's running in, you know, a field of nothing. So, that's what's great about cross country. It's not a track. You're getting to go out and you're just competing and just running against everybody. It doesn't matter the distance and that kind of stuff. You know, if you're out there just doing that competing, then the winner will win, you know, that kind of thing. So
going into the conference meet up in a canyon, up in the Panhandle this weekend, what do we know about, is that course more similar to some of the hillier courses we were running at the beginning of the year, or is it closer to a flat course like we were running towards the end of the year? I mean, it is the Panhandle. It's West Texas. Is it more of a flat course, or is it more one of those hilly golf course style?
So this course is a little bit of both. It's altitude, a little bit altitude, 3,000 feet elevation, and it's pretty nice. It's pretty wide. The footing is nice, but whenever you go to canyon, it's a lot of dirt, and it's not much grass. So you get a lot of sandy, that kind of material. There's not really many hills. The last little bit is a hill, but other than that, it's pretty flat course, pretty nice, like ours. So,
and then the other part, that the other variable I was looking at, as we're going to be out there covering it as part of our SID West Texas Road Swing that we're going to get to take this weekend. It says that the low on Saturday is 40 degrees in Canyon. Mm-hmm. It's October in the Panhandle. I'm sure we should be used to that. But
yeah,
that's not something you can really replicate, cold, dusty conditions. How much of that is just mind over matter, and how much of it will actually impact somebody no matter who they are?
Yeah, so one thing that I really focus on is being mentally tough. So I started it from the very beginning when I came in. Our team motto is motivated people find a way.
Okay.
So no matter if it's pouring down rain, if it's 30 degrees, if it's 100 degrees, we're going to figure out a way to get better and to do this, you know. And last, you know, I think it was 2 weeks ago, it was 37 degrees and pouring down rain, and we had it all clear on the sign, so we got out there and did a workout. you know, people think I'm crazy because I was standing out in the middle of the field blowing a whistle and, like, you know, cheering them on and that kind of thing. But
well, you are a little crazy, but no more well, yeah. crazy than any other cross country yeah. coach I've met.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, when whenever you, you know, you put them in that situation and, you know, let them be successful, and whenever, you know, if it is 30 degrees or windy or whatever it may be, it doesn't matter, you know, because if they train that way, whenever they race that way, it's going to be, well, we're going to go out and do what we need to do.
Right after that, only 2 weeks in between the LSC meet and the NCAA regional up in Denver, which I know is a great atmosphere. They do a great job with that race in Denver in that yeah. city part. In cross country, it's obviously going to be different than some of these other sports. How do you qualify for regionals? Is there a qualifying process? How does the next few weeks pan out for the postseason?
So when you go into conference, you know, everybody can essentially go to the regional meet. If you have your meets throughout the year, but how you qualify for nationals is which is the big goal for us. They have like a bidding process, which is very, very confusing. You know, basically, like our region is one of the toughest regions around, with all the Colorado schools. You know, had the top five teams finished in the top 10 last year in the nation.
Wow.
So it's very, very competitive. So you've got to go and get, you know, top five or top six at the regional meet to go to the national meet, which is taking, you know, I think last year they took four Colorado schools and WT. So it was the teams at altitude have a little bit of an advantage, but it's the teams at lower sea levels can do it if they just, you know, go out there and race well.
Can you qualify as just an individual, or yes. do you have to take a whole team?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they do the next three fastest that aren't on a team. Which is, I mean, you have to be in the top, usually in the top 10 or top 15, which is smoking fast.
What kind of time over, was that a 10K or an 8K for
yeah,
the guys?
Yeah, so the men jump up to 10K, which is 6.25 miles, and the girls stay at the 6K distance. So for the girls, it's going to take somewhere around, you know, low 22 minutes, which ends up being somewhere around 5:55 per okay. mile. And for the men, it's going to take somewhere around 31 minutes, which is 5:10, 5:15 a mile, somewhere around there.
That's pretty quick.
Yeah, it's pretty moving. Most of our guys are, you know, are capable of running close to that, you know, if they have the right day. But at altitude, it's any man's game.
Yeah, you know, and that's another thing that you can't really replicate mm-hmm. and train in unless you train in it.
Yeah, exactly. So
looking at this meet, we've brought up some of the other teams, Tarleton, West Texas. So I'm not going to say where do you predict to finish, because every coach wants to obviously be the number one team. Mm-hmm. Who are some of the teams we should expect to see at the front of the team race? Not necessarily in
yeah.
order.
Yeah. On the men's side, obviously, like I mentioned already, WT, Tarleton, us, Western New Mexico, those are the top four teams that are kind of have a little bit like tighter pack, one through mm-hmm. five. So in cross country, like, you know, one through five is what helps win championships. If you have a number one that's really good and your four and five aren't very good, you're probably not going to do very well. So all four of those teams, there's a couple other teams too that are right there. If they have a good day, they can be up in that mix. But I think those four teams are the teams that have the opportunity to be anywhere, you know, if they have a good day. That's on the men's side. So on the women's side, it's just a dog race, literally from first to eighth place. I had a prediction scale today, and there was two teams, Midwestern and Eastern New Mexico, that were kind of out in front of everybody. But like third through eighth were within like 30 points of each other.
Wow.
So that's a very, very tight race. If somebody has a good race, if somebody has a bad race.
Somebody slips and falls.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that happens all the time. Somebody goes down, somebody sprains an ankle, something like that. You never know. So it's very, very tight. That tight pack is, you know, between the third and eighth place for the women's side.
Well, we look forward to being out there to cover it on Saturday morning. Marcus, June, and I will be out there. I don't think we have any cowbells, but we will be able to get plenty of highlights of cross country running.
Yeah.
We'll be out at women's basketball is playing at Baylor on Thursday night at 7 p.m. It'll be on their Facebook Live page, similar to this is for everybody who can't make it, and it'll also be on KETR as well. So best of luck, Coach, to the cross country team out in Canyon and in Denver. In a couple of weeks, let's give Coach Scribner a round of applause. We'll take a very quick break.
and we'll bring up our head football coach, Colby Carville, so we can run over our homecoming victory over WT. We'll be right back on Lions Roar.
The program you're enjoying right now was made possible by a group of folks just like you who make contributions to public radio. Support programs just like this one. Visit KETR.org and click donate.
All right, we're back live from Snuffers here on the Lions Roar Coaches Show. We're up here with our head football coach, Colby Carville, coming off of a 41-16 homecoming win over West Texas A&M. Talk a little bit about the homecoming experience first. Like, I saw you out there walking around before the game and getting to see lots of people, lots of the returning guys who graduated from last year's national championship team. That was about as good of a football day as we've had around here in a long time.
No doubt. It was a lot of fun. It was a true homecoming. And we've been here long enough now as a staff that we're starting to see a lot of our former players that played for us over the past 5 years come back. And so that was pretty special. And there was seven or eight guys we hadn't seen since maybe Kansas City or shortly thereafter that were back in attendance and had a good time at the game, got to call the roll there afterwards, and even made it over the postgame party. So it was a lot of fun seeing a lot of old Lions, you know, from recent years and from years gone by. But it's a great crowd. It's tremendous weather, you know, which we were due. We'd had some bad weather all year, but it was about 82 degrees that day, and I don't know how many thousands of people were at it. Tailgate, but there was a bunch. I was nearly late to the game, but it was fun just to visit with everybody and shake some hands and see some familiar faces. And then, of course, you know, the game was went the way we wanted it to. Homecoming's not much fun if you lose. So thankfully the guys took care of business and played really well that second half and put WT away and had a good sound victory, which helped make homecoming fun and also really helps with the playoff picture.
Now that you've had some time to sleep on it, review the film, we know that when we talked right after the game, we knew that we'd won all three phases of the game very handily. What's the part of the game that stands out in your brain having looked at the tape a little bit more? What was the big turning point?
In my brain.
In your brain.
You know, I think the big turning point was probably the interception return. You know, they were, you know, about halfway down the field and you know, they threw it down near the goal line, and Dominic Ramsey made a tremendous play on it, and then a really good job by the other 10 guys, you know, getting ahead, blocking above the waist and not in the back, and he did a tremendous job of that return, and that really kind of put the game out of reach, three-score game, and it was just manage it from there. But that was probably the big turning point. Had some fun there in the game with Kristoff, and he got him up he's leading. I guess is his career best in terms of rushing yardage.
Yes, it is his career best rushing yardage.
Picked up a big first down there on a fake field goal and nearly had him an onside, but didn't quite get it. Went about 9.5 yards and just kind of died because it was wide open there, but just didn't quite execute. But it is a fun day for him, you know, breaking the record, all-time leader in field goals, you know, in terms of LSC history. So that was fun for him to do that. And Sergio Castillo, the kicker that we had there at WT, owned that record.
Yes.
He was actually there in attendance for the game. So it was kind of neat for Kristoff to break such a special record like that and have the guy that was broke was there.
You said Sergio's from the Valley as well, too. So they've known each other for a while.
And Sergio actually kind of helped put us on Kristoff many years ago, and we recruited him and got him here, and he's sure had a tremendous career.
He's up over 400 career points now. He's only the third player in LSC history behind Sergio and Johnny Bailey to have 400 career points, and he's still got two-plus weeks to add to that total.
Johnny Bailey was pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, three Harlan Hills.
That's, would have won four. They didn't give it to freshmen back then. So you know. That was back when it was Texas A&I. Ray Hawkins remembers that. Now they call him Kingsville or something.
Something, whatever, you know. One of the other things that stood out to me when I look back on it was 10 points on really good field possession after a turnover on the strip sack and the blocked punt. That's the second straight week we've blocked a punt coming up the middle and not from the edge, and not the same guy and not the same protection and not even the same style. One was low, one was high. How much does that field position really give the guys a boost on big turnovers like that?
You know, I think it's huge. You know, when you look up, you don't have to go very far. I mean, you can see there, second and third quarter, our average field position was, you know, on their side of the 50. And that's your chances of scoring go way, way up the closer you take over possession. And, you know, Coach May is in charge of our punt block, punt return unit, and they've done a tremendous job. You know, Dominic Ramsey is leading the conference in punt returns. And now I think we're up in the top 25 in terms of block punts, and had two in a row here the last 2 weeks. So that unit's really hitting its stride. All our special teams are, you know, competing at a very high level, kickoff return. I think Kincaid is second in the country, leading the conference, obviously, in individual returns and doing a great job. Our net punting is way up there, I think, leading the conference and top 20 in the country. And our kickoff coverage is still one of the best in all of college football.
By less than half a yard.
And we're pretty good at kicking field goals, obviously, with Kristoff. Yeah. So that's really, you know, why I think we've got a chance to continue playing a while. We're not as flashy or scoring as many points as we have in the past offensively, but, you know, offense doesn't win championships. It's, you know, and I think we've got a championship-caliber defense. I think we've got a more than capable offense. It's very productive, I'm sure you'll talk about. And then our special teams really give us a chance in each and every game. And, you know, coming out of this past one, we were up, you know, 3-0 in the turnover margin. I believe it was the first game all year that we haven't had a turnover in offense or special teams, and that's embarrassing that it took us nine games to do that, but maybe we're finally peaking at the right time. But if we continue to go +3 in the turnover margin, we'll be a really tough team to beat for the next couple weeks.
One of the other guys that stood out to me, and he's at the top of the stat sheet, so it makes it easy to stand out, but a career high in rushing yardage for Ovi Arebu, a guy who's put in a ton of time, overcome a lot of injuries, transferred in. He has 20 carries for 118 yards, does just about everything but score, averages over 6 yards a carry. So it's pretty cool for a senior to have his career high rushing yards on homecoming.
Right, and he's a 6-year senior. He was supposed to be a senior last year, and he tore his ACL there last practice, about the last period of spring ball. But, you know, things happen for a reason, and it's blessed him with another year to be a part of the program. He's already got his degree, working on his master's, and just a terrific young man. Really proud of what he's accomplished with us on the field, but more importantly, what he's going to accomplish in life, because he is an absolute winner and going to do our university proud for many, many years. But really happy for him. That was a great homecoming for him, and I know his family enjoyed it and friends, and he's one of the team favorites. So when he scores, or he actually didn't score, but when he has a big night, everybody enjoys it.
The other one that stands out, you were saying the offense isn't necessarily as flashy, not picking up as many points. Only 131 yards passing for Kane Wilson, but 12 completions against 15 attempts. Only 3 incompletions, no interceptions. Then he accounts for 3 touchdowns, punching in 2 on the ground as well. He did a really good job, I thought, running the offense and not trying to do too much with what was in front of him.
Right. That's all he really needs to do, is just be the mailman and get the ball where it's supposed to be. And he continues to get more and more comfortable running the offense. And, you know, he can hurt you with his feet a little bit. I know he, you know, had – you know, 7 or 8 carries, and some of those are designed, you know, in short yardage, and I think he's got 8 or 9 rushing touchdowns on the year in that truck package. But, you know, he can get himself out of some jams with his feet or if protection breaks down. But, again, was very accurate with the ball Saturday, and we're going to need that moving forward because that's the thing. All you've really got to do is be efficient offensively and take care of the ball and drive the field. And our offensive line is playing really, really well. I think we rushed for nearly 250 yards. Saturday, and anytime you do that, you're going to give yourself a chance. And so kudos to those guys up front playing really well.
Yeah, average 4.9 yards a carry on 50 carries. That's including kneel downs in that 50 carries too. So that's a heck of a rushing average. And then the other offensive guy, Ryan Stokes, had that 68-yard completion there to start the second half. And when you showed us the highlight at the Lion Champions Fund booster lunch today, I completely did not realize. I thought it was maybe a busted coverage or something like that. Well, it wasn't a bust of coverage. He just flat out ran the dude. I knew Stokes was quick, but I don't know if I knew he was that quick.
Yeah, I don't know if he's real quick. He's fast. Quick as guys like that. This guy can just flat go. And he got behind him in a hurry, and Kane made a really nice pass. And you know, that was a big completion. And we need to do that more often. We need to push the ball down the field, and that opens up some things in the run game as well. So Stokes has really come on and earned his starting role with offense. He's been playing at a high level all season.
Buffaloes came into the game with one of the top rushing attacks, and they did lose their running back the week before. So you expect a little bit different. And as you were saying, they're running a slightly different offense because of that. We still held them under 1 yard per carry on rushing attempts. 26 rushes for 23 yards. How much of that is defensive line? How much of that is linebackers? How much is that it's the whole thing just coming together at the right time?
Well, it's everybody. You know, we're going to try to get one extra hat in the box, and so a lot of those safeties in nickels and even corners, you know, and some corner blitzes are doing a great job coming up and fitting the run. Linebackers have fit a lot better and weren't – they were in position, got us lined up. We had a few issues that the two previous weeks. And of course, D-line does a really good job and has a big hand in that because you got to see they've got – you know, about 50-something yards in negative plays, which those are tackles for loss or sacks, which goes against their rushing yardage. So really just a team effort, and we're built to stop the run, and maybe we hadn't played as well as we wanted to 2 weeks ago there against Tarleton. Even against Western New Mexico, we'll give a big run that we weren't real proud of. But starting to play really well against the run again, and I think we're going to need that to be successful over the next few weeks.
5 sacks and 13 total tackles for loss, 3 forced fumbles, 2 of which we recovered. That's a lot of disruption, active hands. And as big as Dominique Ramsey's play was, I thought Jalen Edwards Cooper, that call was coming back on a holding penalty. I think everybody in the stadium might have known that except for the defensive backs and the guy with the ball. And Jalen comes over the top, smacks down, forces the ball out at the 3-yard line, and gets recovered in the end zone by L.A. Dawson. That's about as perfect as a turnover as you can get when the team's down in the red zone.
Right. No, you know, we have a saying on defense, good things happen to guys who run the ball. And and it sure did. And with Jalen, just a straight effort play. And then once you get there, you know, to attack the football. That's a lot of people make tackles, and that's great. But if you just make tackles, they're going to continue to move down the ball, down the field, and score. So you got to get the ball back. That's that's what this game's about. And those guys are really doing a good job of attacking the football. And like I say, 3 turnovers and not giving any up. When you're plus 3 in the turnover margin, you're going to have a good chance to be successful.
Cater Kohu was the leading tackle man. He had 6 solo stops, 2 tackles for loss, and a pass breakup. Redshirt sophomore, I believe, right? And that's a kid who has really made his presence known over the past, I would say, 4 to 5 weeks. And stepped up, and I mean, you brought him to LCF luncheon today. That's usually a sign of somebody who's not just doing things well, but progressing as well.
Well, that's 2 straight weeks. I tried to get him there last week, and he had a group project he's working on there with school. But he's played very well at a Euless Trinity High School, and you know, he's not a real tall, rangy guy, but he's probably maybe our best cover guy, and that's why he's playing that boundary corner for us and getting a lot of balls thrown his way. And he's, I think, 2nd in the conference in pass breakups, and you know, I think 1st in the conference in forced fumbles. He's really putting together an all-conference type campaign this year. And so really glad he's on our team. He's a fun guy to coach and just a really neat individual.
Anything we're missing from the homecoming game? I mean, it feels like the game came together we wanted the way we wanted it to. The weather came together the way we wanted it to. Everybody was having a great time. The crowd was huge. About the complete package.
I don't even think you made many mistakes. Stat in the game. So
well, I wasn't doing stats. I was
whatever you did. I think you did okay.
Fill in PA
so it was
announcer.
A successful day. That's right. You PA'd.
Yeah. Roger came down with an allergy attack right before the game.
He sounded like death warmed over.
He tried.
We were out there in pregame, and he was going through the starting lineups. I said, "This is gonna sound. It's gonna make for a long game listening to him." And he's got the best voice of any PA guy I've ever been around. And he was struggling.
He tried to fight through it.
So that was you.
That was me for the entire game.
Well, you filled in nicely.
Well, I do appreciate that.
Breaking in from the bullpen.
The rare compliment for the SID. I like it. So.
Yes. Rarely do you do right.
That I will.
I'm just teasing, Josh.
I know. I'll just let that one ride. So then the other game we talked about, like I said, we had to talk about it last week. It was turned into essentially the conference championship game. That Tarleton Midwestern game coming down to special teams, and give us your opinions on how much special teams matter and how much that's going to turn into a conference championship kind of play for some team or another in pretty much every conference season.
Well, it is. You know, it's a big part of the game, and Midwestern, you know, unfortunately lost that game. We were, you know, not a lot of times we root for the Mustangs, but we were sure rooting for them there on Saturday night as they played Tarleton. If they could have pulled that one out, it would have been a 3-way tie and for the conference championship, and that would have been nice. You know, we were wanting to get back on top of the conference and be conference champions. But we, no matter what happened in that game, we didn't handle our business that 4th quarter against Tarleton. So that was frustrating to be in a situation where we're having to hope somebody else loses to clinch a title. So we got to get that fixed next year and straighten that out. But it was a very good game, 2 very good teams. We played them both. And, you know, there were some back and forth. There were some calls. There were some plays that you know, could have flipped that game. Like any close game with two good teams, there's always going to be some of those plays you go back and scratch your head. But came down the you know, play everybody's focusing on is, you know, in overtime. Charlton scored, then Midwestern scored and was attempting the extra point to tie it up and send it to second overtime, and they just mishandled the snap. And it makes you appreciate a guy like Kristoff and our field goal unit and Preston Wheeler or Holder and whoever's snapping. You know, we've had Wyatt Leith and Drake Flores both snap. But I think, knock on wood, I'm going to jinx them, but we've got the longest active streak in Division II in terms of extra points made. So let's hope we can keep that going.
Yeah, he's one of only two guys over 60 now. Julio at Kingsville was right at 100, and then they missed one.
Mm-hmm.
So region rankings come out today. Lions move up to sixth in the region. Mankato's still at first. Tarleton jumps from fifth to second. When you're undefeated and your strength of schedule goes up that much, that's to be expected. Minnesota Duluth undefeated at third. Mines undefeated at fourth. Did you see their box score by any chance?
84 points.
They were up 49-42 at halftime and won 84-42.
Made some good halftime adjustments on defense.
Yeah, 70 points in two quarters of that game. That's a very impressive total. Pueblo in fifth at with one loss. Commerce in sixth with two losses. Midwestern in seventh with two losses. Central Washington in eighth. Azusa in ninth. And Chadron in tenth. So if the season ended today, A, it would be early, but B, we would be headed up to Duluth, Minnesota. I think we're at about the spot with the way the season's played out and having two losses. We're about the spot we deserve to be and the spot we want to be.
Yeah, we're in the toughest region in the nation, and so that's about all you can hope for is just to be in. You look at, I think it's Super Region 2 down there, the Gulf South, we'd be second in the region.
I'm pretty sure you're right about that.
You win conference there, you're one. You're runner-up, you're two. It's not much in that region. But, no, we're excited to be in the picture, and you know, we just got to continue to handle our business, and I think you'll see those. There's going to be four undefeated teams in our region, and you'll see that continue to jumble and switch spots in the next two weeks. It comes down to that final ranking just because the strength schedule changes. Tarleton will probably drop over the next couple weeks just because of they play Lincoln and Western New Mexico, so their strength schedule is going to really take a hit. And so we just got to handle our business. We broke it down to four quarters. We're at a quarter number three. Got to go out there and play UTPB and handle our business. The rest take care of itself, and we'll go on the road and see if we can make some noise again in the playoffs.
You segued right into my segue. Headed out to UTPB for the third quarter of the back half of the season and going into the postseason. Headed to Ratliff Stadium for a 6 o'clock kickoff on Saturday, home of Friday Night Lights, Permian, Mojo, a little bit. It's interesting that there's a college team there now, and it's their third year. They've obviously improved. And I'm sure – does that Friday Night Lights, Mojo, Ratliff Stadium thing still carry over to this younger group that didn't necessarily know Permian to be the power they were back in the day and read the book and all that?
I don't think so. Kids these days don't read books, and so nobody's read that book. And that movie's, you know, 12 years old, so no one's watched that movie. And the sitcom, which I never saw either, is off the air now too, so nobody watches reruns. So I don't know that many of them really know what it is. But it's a stadium, and it's 100 yards long, the field is, and we'll show up there to play Permian Basin. They're improved. I think talent-wise they're, you know, similar to, you know, some of the teams we, you know, maybe just faced with West Texas. And you know, they had them deadlocked at halftime. So we're going to have to show up and play. It is a fourth year of their program, and they've got several guys that are, you know, they've got a few seniors and about 30 juniors. And so they're starting to really get those kids developed. And so I don't expect a blowout like we had last year. I think we beat them 52 or 53 to nothing, but it'll be a good hard-fought ball game, and hopefully we got a chance to get out there and get us a win. And unfortunately it's at 6 p.m and I think that's ridiculous. Obviously people don't take into account student athlete welfare, and we've tried to get that thing passed where we start every game after October 1st at 4 or earlier, but some teams refuse to abide by that, and so we'll play at 6, and we'll play at 6. So we'll get home at 8 in the morning. Not too happy about that, but we'll be ready to play.
One of our road trip questions we've had, and I gave you 2 weeks to prepare this time, so this isn't a curveball. You've headed out to West Texas in the Permian Basin a number of times. If you're headed over on I-20 as a fan, are there any places we should stop to eat? Is there any place we should stop and be a big-time coach? Or a big coach.
If you like Steak.
Well, I.
The best steak in Texas is on the way.
Where would that be?
The very best steak I've ever eaten, and I eat it over and over and over again when I go there. It's called the Beehive.
Okay.
The original is out there in Albany, Texas. So you kind of got to make a little detour, and it's in the old Fort Griffin merchandise store. So you actually walk into a state historical landmark, and, I mean, you feel like you're walking back in time about 200 years. And this is all you need to eat the ribeye there.
Okay. Marcus, write this down. You're going to be putting this in the GPS for our drive.
No steak knife needed. It's the best ribeye steak in the great state of Texas. There's also a Beehive restaurant open in Abilene now, downtown on I think it's on Cypress Street. But it's actually run by two Iranian brothers.
Interesting.
Ali and Nariman is their names.
Okay.
And so who would have thought you'd go to the state of Texas and eat the greatest steak you've ever had.
In Albany, of all places.
In Albany, of all places, at a state historical monument, cooked by two Iranian immigrants. But there you have it.
There it is.
Those guys are very, very talented. They're wonderful people. And that'll be the best ribeye steak you've ever eaten, I promise you.
So. All right. Well, Marcus, I think, is already plugging it into the GPS. We'll be driving up on Friday, headed towards Amarillo from the women's basketball game in Waco on Thursday night. So we'll see you out in Odessa, rather. Midland would be the wrong stadium.
I may send you a blank check and pick me up a steak dinner and bring it to me. I don't get to stop and do that. So
we're going Amarillo Friday and coming down.
Oh, so we're not even going to get to Adelaide.
We'll find a way. We've got plenty of time to get from there.
Don't get my hopes up, Josh.
Well, on that disappointing note, we will end this interview and head towards the last segment of Lions Roar. Let's give Coach Carlo a big round of applause. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to talk golf with head coach Matt Ward.
This show and others like it from KETR.org are made possible by generous contributions from listeners just like you. Donate today at KETR.org.
We're back live here from Snuffers in Greenville for the final segment here of the Lions Roar Coaches Show. We don't get him here very often because their tournaments are normally on Monday and Tuesday, and we do this on Monday night. So here's our head men's and women's golf coach, Matt Ward. We've had a few tournaments since the last time we talked.
Here's our head men's.
The golf clap.
Now here's our head men's and women's golf coach approaching the table.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the final two tournaments for both teams since the last time we talked. The men's team finished seventh in one tournament at the RMAC and then came out, finished really strong at Midwestern, placing second. Guys are, like you said, tell us a little bit about where they are in the regional rankings so far, even though it doesn't necessarily, I'm not going to say it doesn't matter, but it's definitely not where they'll end up.
Right. Right now, most of the postseason is based off of golf stat rankings, and right now we're 11th in the region. Top 10 move forward in the South Central region, which is the Rocky Mountain Athletic Conference, our Lone Star Conference, the Heartland Conference. So 10 teams will go out of there. Through four tournaments, we're 11th. So not great, but certainly not out of the picture. The last finish was a good one at Midwestern. It was back-to-back tournaments of just awful weather. Denver, you'd expect it to be pretty nice, and it was just brutal, some of the worst conditions we've ever played in. And the guys battled, but we took a DQ, which is never fun, and it cost us a handful of strokes again. But that one's as much my fault as it was his, an unsigned scorecard, so it was pretty dumb on my part too. But so that one hurt a little bit, but at the end of the tournament, those five strokes we lost wouldn't have moved us up at all. So no shocker, the team that won it, almost every guy on their team is from Scotland, Ireland, or England. So
conditions
they were used to. That was Colorado State Pueblo.
And, oh, yeah, we played with them at regionals last year. I remember that.
Nathan McCann. I know a lot of those guys are Fraser. I know they're all, like I say, they're from across the pond, so it was like home for them. But we came back, played in Wichita Falls at Midwestern's tournament, and played pretty well. We battled some more elements. It was not nearly as bad as Denver, but it was not pleasant. But the guys went out and they battled. Really good showing out of my true freshman. Alex Welch came out and actually had the low round of the tournament for us. Shot 68 on Tuesday, which was a great score. Solid to see that from him. You know, of course, we're always concerned because it seems like we find a way to, you know, to give away some strokes near the end of every tournament round. I think every coach could say that. But, you know, tied for second, not too bad. I mean, we weren't really sniffing a win there. Midwestern on their home course was pretty tough to beat, and they're a good team anyway. But playing on their home course and their conditions, you know, it was tough. So we knew we were battling for just second place, and I was pleased with the way the guys played out there for that one. So it was good. So we've set ourselves up to get in, six tournaments to go. The tough part for us is five of the six teams in front of us are RMAC schools, and we probably won't see them again this year. St. Edward's within striking distance. I believe they're ninth in the region. And the top four teams in the region are all Lone Star Heartland, so we'll see them a lot. So if we can actually play well against those four teams, that should vault us into the top 10 without a problem.
Moving over to the women's side, since we've talked, another pair of top five finishes and a runner-up finish at the Skyhawk
That was
Fort
solid.
Lewis hosted in New Mexico, and all sorts of records falling across the board for the women's team.
Yeah, that was, you know, prior to getting to that tournament, I was pleased to see the ladies pull another top five out at Dallas Baptist Tournament. So they played well, pleased to see that, in some really rotten conditions. They got rain shortened. Not that that's a shocker out here. It seems to rain a lot since I got
this
here.
This isn't normal. I know you're new here, but this much rain is not normal.
Everybody keeps telling me that. I think I brought it with me or something. I'm going to get fired for that reason. But no, so after that tournament, we went out to Albuquerque again, played in Fort Lewis's event. Really, really played well there. After day one, we were tied for first. We were one under par as a team, which is obviously a good score. You're never too unhappy when you're shooting under par. But, you know, the reality is we have a very young team that went out there. One senior, one junior, and three sophomores went out and played. And so I knew it'd be a little bit of a challenge. Our goal when we first went out there was top five. And being tied for first, I thought, all right, well, we're probably going to achieve that goal. But we need to see what we can handle as a young team and to be put in that situation. And we started off slow, you know, kind of stumbled out of the gate. I think we were 7 over about 3 holes into it, which wasn't our finest. But we maintained, got it back together, finished 10 over on the day, which got us a tied for second finish. The team that beat us, or team that won, West Texas A&M, ranked number 9 in the country. I think they'll eventually be the number 3 team in our region at the end of this regional ranking. Tied Midwestern State, they're 20th in the region. We were 17th, but we managed to beat three teams that were ranked in our region ahead of us. I think it was Pueblo, Regis, and Rogers. I think we were behind them in the rankings, so now we should maybe pass them. But I think the biggest accomplishment is Cal State San Marcos, who wasn't in the Gulf State rankings because they haven't played enough events, statistically speaking, was the best team in the region. So to beat them was really a huge deal for us, to knock them down. So really a solid event for us. I think the girls learned a lot about how to play with some emotion and with some expectations on them. But it was a solid event for us because we got a lot of heads-up victories against a lot of teams that are in our region. So that was a good one. So we won't know until tomorrow afternoon where we sit after this week's rankings. But we went from 22 to 17 to, I got to think, we'll be 13 or 14 and top 12 get in. So we're, again, right on the edge, but within striking distance for sure. And, again, 6 more events in the spring for the ladies. So we've got a solid shot at making the postseason, which I think was a – kind of a potentially a long shot, but when the season started, but they've played really well. The addition of Sarah has been really good, but I think to see Paige step up, McKenna step up and play well, Sophie's been playing well. I mean, they're just playing really well right now.
I was going to say that program. I've been involved with them for 3 seasons now, and they weren't bad, but they weren't necessarily a contending program, and they've been in the top 5 of every event this fall. That's a heck of a jump up.
Right. Yeah. It was fun when we. I think it was. The score was the best score relative to par in school history.
Yes,
so that was fun. They've managed to card plenty of top fives, and I think they have 3 of the top 5 or 6 scores ever carded in school history.
Yep.
this fall. So it's hard to be too upset. I mean, of course, as a coach, you always find ways to see your team improve, and we have plenty of areas to improve upon. But very pleased with the way they're playing right now. I think they've given themselves everything they need to, which is to give themselves a shot at making the postseason.
So now you're pretty much off until the first weekend or so of March in terms of competitive action.
Correct.
How much coaching do you get to do? And golf is kind of a go out there and coach yourself kind of sport to an extent as well. So what happens in between now and the next tournament in March?
Well, my compliance officer is here. I'm sure she'll be happy to hear me tell her that it's 8 hours a week and only 2 hours of skill instruction involved in that 8 hours. So we'll be out there for a couple hours a week doing skill instruction, a few hours a week in the gym, and then in team meetings for the other couple hours a week. So that's for you, Caitlin. Yep, I know. Thumbs up on that one. So that's what we get till the week before finals. then we disconnect a little bit. But when we get back in January, we get to go into 20 hours a week again, up to 4 hours a day, and we'll be practicing. The guys, I think, first events last week in February. Gals start off first weekend in March. So we've got some time to work with them, fine-tune a few things, get a couple things hashed out. Coach Mason and myself laid out a plan today where we're going to keep the team fairly separate. We're only going to bring them in four people at a time for a couple hours and really get some hands-on instruction time with them. So that'll be good. And now it's they're getting their butts kicked in the weight room. I know that. So it's now you can be a little bit harder on them. So we need to get a little bit of size, a little bit of power, a little bit of endurance. And so we'll get that done before February comes around. And otherwise, it becomes recruiting fest right now. It's time to close out the 2019 class, which signing day is coming up on the 14th. And then right into the 2020 class. So we've got recruiting trips kind of going all over the country. And in fact, I think I'm sending Coach Mason back to Australia to go recruit her homeland. And hopefully she can find us another young lady for the 2019 class. And so really it kind of goes right from competitive season to competitive recruiting season.
We do have a guest question here for the golf coach. No, you don't get to read it. I get to read it.
Okay.
I recognize your voice and notice you're also the PA announcer at volleyball. Lord.
Yes.
What is your core philosophy on how to announce a sporting event?
Try and be as loud and obnoxious as possible for the home fans to enjoy and the opposing fans to hate. I think that would probably be about it. If you've been to a volleyball game, you've heard the rather obnoxious Point Lion call that I make, and I'm pretty sure it'll cause some nightmares for at least a few people.
I was going to say, I was walking from the field house down to Memorial Stadium, and I was in the press box, and I could hear it echoing in the field house. And as the other guy who does PA for volleyball, that's a pretty impressive feat. That's a hard room to fill up.
I can be rather obnoxious, as you've probably figured out. So doing that.
He said it, not me. I want to make sure that he said it, not me.
We just know everybody in the room's thinking it, so that's okay.
Oh, that's fine. Well, hey, congratulations on a good first season so far.
Thank you.
It's kind of halftime of the season, I guess.
It
you
is.
Get a little halftime pep talk, and then good luck in the spring, and hopefully we'll be able to get you on and talk to you a little bit right before you get back into that spring competitive season.
Absolutely. We'd love to do it.
All right. Well, that's head coach Matt Ward, and that'll be our last guest here tonight. Don't forget, the women's basketball team is at Baylor, 7 p.m. on Thursday night. You can hear that on KETR. They'll also be on Facebook Live. Football, 6 o'clock on Saturday in Odessa. Volleyball is at 7 o'clock on Friday in Portales against Eastern. 1 o'clock on Saturday against West Texas in Canyon. Thanks, everybody, for watching. Thanks, everybody at the bar. This is Josh Mank signing off for Lions Roar.